Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. It's the 4th of June 2026, and it is coming up to 6:30. I've actually recorded all of this. Well, I say recorded it. I've actually spoken all of this, but didn't press the button on the recorder. So this is a second attempt to record today's podcast. And I apologise once again, as I inevitably do, that these podcasts are not regular as they have been. As you know, Julia and I are either launching ourselves first thing in the morning up and out towards the land, or we're on the land and we're launching ourselves out if the sun is shining and appreciating the early morning and having a conversation about what our plan of action is. So there's been a lot of difference in the routine, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say, in our normal thing. And in the past, it's been obviously much, much easier when one is just permanently at home to get up early and record the new dude, as you know. And if you're a long-term listener to it, then you'll understand that. Now, everything is a little bit spasmodic. Spasmodic, is that the right?
Sporadic.
Sporadic. Spaz is a funny word, isn't it? But I don't think we're supposed to be using that. Spasmodic. But spasmodic, isn't spasmodic a word, or is that not a word?
It's suitable, I think.
But anyway.
It's a bit out there, but...
Yes. There are certain words that one questions whether you can use them anymore. Because of, I don't know, they sound too much like something else. Niggardly is a word that comes up in every now and again, and it's a genuine word, and it has no relation whatsoever to, you know, what some people might immediately jump to. And it's funny when you read it in a book, because you think, oh, that's almost a different word, and we're not allowed to say that because it is offensive, but it's not an offensive word in the English language and has been used for many times. Anyway, there are words that sound like they're a bit dodgy, but they're not dodgy at all. And it's always fun to come across them. Can't remember what I was originally saying. Anyway, I was apologising. And also the videos are a little spasmodic. What was the word you said? Sporadic. Yes, the videos are also sporadic. The daily stuff that I, you know, enjoy doing has just been interrupted, I think, by the whole land project, which we've been doing now for 10 months. And on that note, the 10 months, I mean, not quite a year, but nearly. And I've now started to see how, when we first came in, the first job was to try and reclaim the land from brambles and thistles and tall grasses and stinging nettles. And unless you're on it, and we've cleared certain area of the 2.5 acres, but unless you're on it, those brambles are coming back. Particularly, the stinging nettles are fine because they're easily scythable. You can whip them down quite quickly, but the brambles are a pain. Thistles are everywhere and they just keep popping up, and it doesn't matter how many times you pull them out, they keep popping up, the swines. But the brambles are the things that really cause me grief, because the long, wiry growth of them, where they start to, their tendrils, is it tendrils or tentacles? Either, they sort of whip themselves and crawl and curl around other objects like trees or anything else that's, you know, a pile of logs, and before you know it, they have curled like a spider's web around these things. And of course they have their thorns, and it's very, you can't just pick them up with your hand and whip them out. You've got to get your gloves on and get a pair of shears and hack at them. And before you know it, you know, you see that, like, it's almost very innocent little plant coming up with its tiny little shoots, and you think, oh, little thing, isn't it? You know, you just easily, I can just crush that with my boot. And then 10 minutes later, it seems, they are 6 foot tall and they have wrapped themselves around things, and suddenly you have an impenetrable forest of at least ankle, if not knee-high, bloody briars scratching away at you and tearing at the skin. And if it's a nice day and you're wearing shorts, your legs are exposed, as we both have. We have the wounds where they have unexpectedly grabbed us. And the thing is, the other thing is, they get you, they attack you when they're dead. You know, you think that you've attacked a monster and you've killed it. That's it. There it is, lying dead. But you still find, if you haven't cleared them, which is difficult to clear all of them, even in their death throes or in their deceased rigor mortis state, very stiff brown things, the thorns are still there. And somehow they make out for you. They kind of leap out and so they're long dead and they still attack. Anyway, that's the fun. That's the fun part. Some people may not say it's fun, but that's the fun part of keeping on top of everything. And you've got to keep on top of it. But luckily, we are, and we can, because we've had 10 months experience and we're now beginning to realise, oh, hello, we've got to start all over again. Well, not quite all over again. We've had, over the last 10 months, a number of construction projects, which, has been essential. If you've been watching The English Couple, of course, you would have seen all of this. And things like the first bit was the veg patch with a little fence around it, which we put in with chicken wire. And just clearing that patch and starting to sort of muck about with it, I suppose. And then, of course, was the small potting poly tunnel that we got up there, and then the workshop, and a decking in front of that. And now we have a bigger potting poly tunnel, although it's not potting at all. It's a poly tunnel.
Proper
one. It's 10 foot wide and 20 foot length deep. And it's done. It's done. And it's magnificent. Although this morning I woke up and it was blowing a hooey this morning. There was gales whipping around the house where we are at the moment, down on the seafront. And I was thinking to myself, let's hope it's still standing. Although when we were there last, it was also blowing a lot and it was untouched. So I have a lot of faith in the construction, even though I did it myself with obviously the assistance of the lovely Julia. But yes, we did it ourselves. And like the first one, it seems to have stood up to quite a wind. Unlike what we hear from other people, that others have said their plastic has blown off or the thing took off and is in another field somewhere and what have you, and have cost arms and legs. So we're very pleased. But anyway, there we are. So that's it. And in the recording I mentioned that I did, it wasn't a recording, it was just a monologue, I suppose, to myself. I was talking about one of the lovely things that has been gifted to me, which I shall be recording and filming in the pipe smoking videos that I do on a Sunday. And that is a selection of pipes by a gentleman called Rob, who have sent them to me. He said in his letter, in his email, that he found them, I guess, in his house. And he said, oh, before I throw them away, I wondered if you might like them. And I said, oh, yes, please, you know, like pipes. These are old estate pipes. Estate meaning that they are previously owned by somebody else's estate. Often, I suppose, you think of estate as somebody's estate, somebody's belongings, and they've died. And, you know, you're dealing with the estate of somebody. And very often that might be a collection of items that would be sold on, and in this case, pipes. So I don't, but this chap's alive, you know, so you can still sell pipes. People sell second-hand pipes. I mean, basically, it's a second-hand pipe. That's basically what it is. But an estate pipe sounds much classier, doesn't it? It sounds like some rich guy's collection of very lovely ornamental pipes that have barely been smoked or have been smoked. Now, some people get a bit funny about that, don't they? They go, oh, well, that's been in somebody else's mouth and somebody else has actually smoked it and their saliva is on it. And of course, pipes can be cleaned and sterilised. And it doesn't, you know, like many things, people wear dead men's clothes when they go to second-hand shops like Oxfam or charity shops and what have you. And they don't necessarily know anything about the clothes, where they've been worn, what countries they were worn in, and what holidays they might have been on, the sweat that somebody had on their back, the DNA that might be in the fibres now, or the emotional state of somebody when they were wearing those clothes. But, you know, people wear hand-me-downs and hand-me-ups and second-hand clothes and without really giving it much, you know, because they've bunged into the wash. So quite why you would have the same attitude with a pipe, I don't know, but some people are very funny about that sort of thing. And I think that's probably because we've all been brought up, not all of us, but some people have been brought up very sensitively and we've got to have things new. And I've mentioned this before in the past that my old girlfriend, Harris, was working in an office and she was in her, I suppose back then she must have been in her late 40s, early 50s. And she was working in a sales office and the rest of the people in the sales office were in their early 20s. And they were talking about getting married and buying houses, as you do at that sort of age. And so Harriet, being somebody who likes history and traditional things, was saying, look, what about this house? And she lives in Shropshire, where there's a lot of timber-framed houses. And the attitude of the people in the office was quite extraordinary, certainly to me, when she related the story. And it was that the girls, and it was mainly girls who were working in the office, said, oh, no, as much, you know, this beautiful timber-framed house from Elizabethan times and whatever, they said, oh, no, couldn't possibly live in a second-hand house. In a second-hand house. No, no, it's got to be brand new. No, no, like my clothes, like my car, like everything. It's got to be brand new. I don't want someone else to have lived in it. And you think, my goodness, these people who've been brought up with this sort of strange attitude that everything has to be brand new. Especially when it, I mean, I can understand to certain things like underpants, bras and, you know, undergarments and things and socks and things. You possibly you don't want to wear somebody else's. I can get that, of course. But when it comes to houses, I find that quite strange that somebody would, particularly when new builds are really quite shoddily put up, the material is not as first rate as perhaps a Victorian house or a Elizabethan house or Georgian house, where things were in fact over-engineered. I mean, you look at some of these houses that exist today, hundreds of years old, the fact that they're still here hundreds of years old tells you that they're in such solid state that they haven't tumbled down. There might be a few little parts of it which need replenishing, but on the whole, and yet it's a very strange attitude that, oh, no, no, brand new. And that house may only last some 50 years before, or less, before things really start to fall apart. But I suppose then what would they do? Would they live there all their lives? Or would they move to another brand new house where, once again, the workmanship and the speed of which these places, these rabbit hutches have been put up, is likely to have deteriorated even more because everything's got to be cheaper and cheaper and cheaper in terms of materials, especially when it comes to wood. Julia and I went to visit an old family woodyard in which a chap called Alan, very nice bloke, had been, it's a family woodyard, as I say, and he takes timber in, and it's a sawmill. That's what it is, not just a woodyard, it's a sawmill. And he saws up logs into planks and various things. And he was saying to us, he said, you know, these commercial ones that you, you know, the big brand names that you go to buy your wood, the places like Wickes and B&Q and all these other sort of timber merchants, that because of the huge quantities of wood that is now being required by people, especially those doing the DIY stuff, the do-it-yourself, and the demand on new houses and new constructions, and you know, timber is being grown, is forced to grow fast, and is far inferior to some of the older timbers, which take hundreds of years to grow. And of course, people want everything cheap, naturally, and so you pay your money, and that's what you get. And hence these new builds, the timber that are in them is far substandard to what would be in, say, the timbers in my house. There's not a lot of timber in my house, I have to say. I mean, the roof there is, of course, but otherwise it's brick. But I dare say it's the same with brick. I don't know. Anyway, I mention all that in passing because I wanted to talk to you about one of the pipes, which you will see in the pipe smoking video. And it is a church warden. It's a small church warden. It's about a foot long. So what is a church warden? It is a pipe with an extended stem. It has a lovely briar bowl with a wonderful flame, what do you call it? Not flame grill. For some reason, that's just come into my head. Flame grain. See? Flame grill, flame grain. And it produces a cool smoke. But why a church warden? Well, I don't know why the name comes about, but I imagine that because it's got a long stem, it's further from your face, which means you can keep it out of your vision if you're reading a book. And of course, you know, church warden, who's there to keep the church and make sure everything in the church is good, he's probably sitting down of an evening to read his Bible. And so perhaps that's where it comes from. I don't actually know. But these old church warden pipes, the long stemmed pipes, were originally clay. And clay pipes, unlike briar and meerschaum, burn extremely hot because the clay is quite thin, the bowl is quite small, but the tobacco, of course, is set alight, and the bowls burn extremely hot. And if you're sitting there in your reading room or with your in your club and you're chatting over a beer or reading or whatever it is you're doing, and you're smoking extensively, that bowl is going to get red hot. And the last thing you want to be doing is, like a traditional pipe that may only be, say, I don't know, 4 to 6 inches, is to be holding the bowl because it'd be too hot. And so an extended pipe, and sometimes they are as much as 2 foot long, means that you would hold the stem possibly between your thumb and 2 or 3 fingers, so that you're not actually holding the stem, and you keep the stem away from your face because it's much easier to hold like that, and you can be more relaxed. And so with a clay pipe, but of course they were relatively expensive back then, these long ones, and so it'd been people who could afford to have them made, they were very much throwaway pipes. And you would have seen them mostly, I suppose, in the old coffee shops of the 1750s onwards, where some of the, perhaps, I don't know, the merchants, the landed gentry, the professions, the sort of big professions, lawyers and bankers and doctors and what have you, those sort of professions would come together and have a jolly old time in their coffee shops or in their taverns with their finery and smoke these sort of pipes. Of course, the clay pipes are obviously being used by all sorts of people, but not so much the long church wardens. When I was younger, used to play on a on a farm, derelict farm in the field, and you'd often see within the field, or if digging or whatever, the stems of old clay pipes from the ploughman who'd been ploughing up and down. And occasionally you'd find discarded bowls, because they were very much disposable pipes, because they were clay, they were brittle, and they would break. And you could snap the stem, but you could carry on smoking it until there was no stem left, and then you would discard the bowl because it was useless. So anyway, I put a new flint into my Zippo, and I shall light this. And it is a rather lovely pipe, and I've always wanted a church warden, just to see how it smoked. Just as I fancied a calabash, which I was also gifted, which I've been very, very lucky on the pipe smoking thing. And again, because of the length of the stem, you do get a very cool, satisfying smoke. You get all the flavour of the tobacco, and you can take a nice long draw and smoke it. You can hear it gurgling down there, because I'd part smoked it in the previous recording, you see. There we are, it's lovely. Anyway, I'm going to enjoy smoking that. How long have we done? He says, looking at the dial to make sure it's actually recorded this time. Which is what I did last time. I looked at the dial and it said 000, because I hadn't pressed the sodding button. 20 minutes, that's long enough. Thank you for listening. And I hope that you have a wonderful day, whatever you're doing. Until next time, from the Naked Englishman. Oh, and I'm looking down and I see that something I've got on charge has charged up, is powered up, ready to be used. So that's good. I'm happy with that. That was being charged overnight. Lovely. Until next time, goodbye.